Hi, everyone. Welcome to Lab Medicine's podcast series. My name is Kelly Swales, and I'm the web editor for Lab Medicine magazine. This podcast is the second part of a series of podcasts on study design to provide evidence for clinical practice. We discussed the features of a randomized control trial last time. In this podcast, Dr. Spam and Chin will talk about case control study design and its advantages and disadvantages.
Hello, everyone. My name is Hui Fan, and I'm currently the Transfusion Medicine Fellow in the JOI program between the New York Blood Center and Columbia University Medical Center. And I am having with me today Dr. Ling Chen, who is a statistician in the Department of the Obstetric and Gynecology at Columbia University Medical Center. Dr. Chen.
Hi. Today, we are going to discuss with you the basic features of a case control design.
And specifically, I am going to go over the basic design of the case control study, and Dr. Chen will go over with you the analysis and the conclusion that you can infer validly from a case control design.
So what's a case control study?
Well, a case control study is a part of an observational study. It falls under an observational study, so it is not a randomized control trial. Classically, it is a study that starts with a identification of the people with the disease, those are the cases, and a people without the disease, that is a control group. And then the relationship between an exposure to the disease with regard to how frequent the exposure is present, or if quantitatively the level of the exposure in this group will be quantified. There are many variants of a case control study, such as a case cohort, a nested case control, or a matched case control design. However, due to the limitation and the time limit of this presentation, only the classical case control will be discussed. The classical case control is what I discussed above, meaning you will pick the people with the disease, call them the cases, and you will look at the people without the disease, call them the control. And then you will look at the association between the group with the disease and the exposure, as well as the group without the disease and the exposure, and compare them and figure out if there is an association between the exposure and the disease. Because it is not a randomized controlled trial, we cannot really prove causation here. We can only do association.
How do you select cases?
As I said, the first step is you have to select the cases, meaning the people with the disease. So you have to select the cases based on the precise definition or the diagnosis of the disease. There are two types of cases that you can do. You either can pick an incident cases or a prevalent cases. The incident cases are the new diagnosed case, meaning that you have to wait for the case to accrue so you can have enough cases for your study. The prevalent cases are the subjects who already have the disease for a while. This means that you will do a retrospective review of the chart and then pick those patients who have the disease. And it means that the cases are already available for the study and you do not have to wait for the case to accrue for your study.
How do you select controls?
After you select the cases, you have to select the control, meaning the people, the subjects without the disease. Selecting the control is the most difficult and the most important part of the case control design. The controls are selected from the same population that give rise to the cases. Well, what are the purpose of the control? The purpose of having a control is to provide the exposure distribution of the source population with regard to the exposure. The method you select the control will affect the validity and the generalizability of the study. It also affects the cost of the study. For example, if you select your controls, your cases in New York and your control in South Africa, your study is not really valid. But if you select both your cases and your control in New York City, it's very difficult to generalize your study, right? And what if you pick both cases and control across the entire U.S., it will make the cost of your study really large. That's why how it affects everything of your study.
What measure of association do you use after selecting the cases and the controls?
Well, there are many association relationships that you can use. I would say that in a randomized control trial, you can obtain directly the risk ratio. However, in the case control because you pre-specify the number of the cases as well as the controls in the study. The appropriate measure of association is the odds ratio in this case. What is the odds ratio? Let's define the odds first. The odds is defined as the probability of the disease over the probability of having not the disease. So in the case control study, the odds ratio that you see reported in the literature is the relationship between the odds that the cases were exposed comparing to the odds that the control were exposed. However, as you know, that we are really interested in the risk ratio. The risk ratio, we want to know the risk of getting the disease if you are exposed versus the risk of getting the disease when you are not exposed. That is what we're really interested in. And those you can only obtain from randomized control trial. Or you can also obtain from cohort study, which is the next topic of the next podcast we will talk about. However, in the case control, you can only obtain the odds ratio. The odds ratio is an indirect measurement or the indirect relationship to the risk ratio, and we have to apply something called the rare disease assumption for the rare disease. Rare disease means that the prevalence of the disease in the general population is less than 10%. We can safely assume that the odds ratio will approximate the risk ratio. Therefore, if your study a very common disease, case control study is not the way to go. Case control study should only be used with the rare disease so that you can approximate the risk ratio using the odds ratio. So I think that will conclude the first part of a basic design of a classical case control study. And now Dr. Chen is going to talk with you about the several common methods of how you analyze the case control study. Assume that you are doing a good job in picking the cases as well as the controls. So Dr. Chen, can you please tell us about how we should start analyzing the case control study after we pick on the subject?
The outcome of a case control study is categorical and usually is binary. We can use Pearson chi-square test to analyze the result. It is a test of independence assessing whether observations on disease and exposure status expressed in a 2x2 table are independent of each other. The null hypothesis here is that disease and exposure are independent, or odds ratio equals 1. We can also use logistic regression model to get the same result.
So Dr. Chen, you mentioned that we can use a 2x2 table, so assume that you have the disease yes, disease no, and exposure yes, and exposure no.
Yes.
How would you use this kind of analysis to extend to look at the multiple exposures at the same time, meaning a multivariable analysis, if you want to examine the effect of different variables on the outcome while controlling for the others?
Then the chi-square test is not a good choice. We can use logistic regression instead. Logistic regression is the most frequently applied method for multivariable analysis of case control studies, especially when the sample size is large. We can include multiple variables, the controls, and the predictors we're interested in one logistic regression model and assess at the same time.
So Dr. Chen, I read a lot of medical literature, and it usually mentioned confounders and effect measure modifier. Can you please tell us a little bit about them, what they are, and what should we do with them in our analysis?
Okay, let's start with confounder. Confounder distorts the association between disease and exposure. There are three criteria that a variable must satisfy to be considered as a confounder. First, it is associated with the exposure in the source population. Second, it is a risk factor for the disease. And third, it must not be in the causal pathway. In the analysis, we need to test that the confounder correlates with both the exposure and the disease, and it is not an intermediate step between exposure and disease, theoretically. Then we compare the change in beta coefficient we get from logistic regression before and after including the confounder in the logistic regression model. if the beta coefficient changes by 10% and all the three criteria are satisfied, we consider confounding exists. For effect measure modifier, or interaction, occurs when the strength of the association varies on the presence of a third variable. We can include an interaction term in the logistic regression model and examine the p-value.
So thanks for the definition of the confounders and the effect measure modifier. So now we understand what they are. So let's say that you had a variable c and you show that it's a confounder for the relationship between the outcome and the exposure. So how do we report that? Do we report a separate result for the presence and absence of the confounder? Or do we have a way we can take this effect of this confounder into a general analysis? And how about if we know that another variable, let's name it variable M, is an effect measure modifier? Do we report them separately and without M? Or do we have a fancy statistical method so we can take into effect, so we can report only one number to simplify, you know, the result for the readers of the design?
So when confounding or interaction exists, we no longer report the crude association, meaning the association we get without considering confounding or interaction. So let's start with confounder. If variable C is a confounder, we report the adjusted OR, the association between exposure and outcome, adjusted by C. So if variable M is an effect measure modifier, we will report separate results for the presence and absence of M.
Okay, so it seems that from after we pick the cases and then the control, we will run the logistic regression, seems to be the most common method to do the analysis, and after that, we will consider different variables to be either confounding or effect measure modifiers and report the results accordingly. That concludes the second section of this podcast on a brief summary and review of how you analyze your case control designs. The next one, we will talk about the strength and the weakness, as well as what biases we can get from case control designs. As you know, review that case control design is an observational study. It is not a randomized control trial. Therefore, there will be some biases in the design. What is bias? Bias is a systematic error in the design, conduct, or analysis of a study that results in a mistaken estimate of an exposure effect on the risk of the disease. This can happen in any study design, and we can never know the full effect of the bias on the results. If you recall from the last podcast piece on the randomized control trial, we randomized the subject. Therefore, we assume that any biases, known or unknown, will be distributed equally among the control as well and the intervention group. However, for observational study, we do not have that capacity to randomize. And you know that you also would recall from our basics by statistical class, that large sample size and fancy, complicated, sophisticated statistical method can only help to decrease the effect of the random bias on the results of the study. However, there are other types of biases that we need to consider, and that might affect the validity of the case control study. Dr. Chen, well, what are the type of biases that we need to be aware of when we design or when we read a case control study result in the medical literature?
There are two types of bias: information bias and selection bias. Information bias occurs when a flaw in measuring exposure or disease results in different accuracy between groups. It often results in misclassification. There are two types of information bias: differential and non-differential misclassification. Differential misclassification occurs when exposure status classification errors are dependent on disease status. It can result in bias towards or away from the null hypothesis. The non-differential misclassification occurs when exposure status classification errors is equal among cases and controls. It results in bias toward the null. Selection bias arises from systematic differences in selecting the cases and controls. It can bias toward or away from the null.
Dr. Chen, as you discussed, that besides the random bias, that we can reduce the effect by using a large sample size as well as sophisticated statistical methods, there are also information and selection bias. If I want to design a good case control study that gives me a good association, a good odds ratio, that a true odds ratio, closer to the truth as possible as I want, how can I avoid the biases in my design?
Well, there's little we can do when it comes to analysis, but in the design phase, we can mask interviewers and subjects to the study hypothesis, rely on non-interview data, or use multiple measures to avoid information bias. For selection bias, we can use the same criteria for selecting cases and controls, obtain all relevant subject records, and take into account diagnostic and referral patterns of disease.
So apparently, for the case control study, we had to be very careful in our designs and analysis in order to avoid these biases.
So in order for the results to be valid, what are the fundamental conditions for the validity of the case control design?
There are two conditions that you need to make sure when design your case control study. As you know, that if we give the computer the letter data, if we just analyze it, it cannot help us to control the way we collect the data. Therefore, you need to collect a good data in order to have a valid result. So there are two criteria that you need to be aware of when you select your cases and control. First, the cases and the control must be selected from the same underlying population. And second, the cases and the control must be selected independently of exposure. What do I mean by those conditions? Let me give you an example. If you would like to design a case control study to look at the association between the lung cancers and smoking, then you need to make sure that, for example, if you select your cases from New York City, then your control, you should also be select from the New York City area and not from, let's say, Minnesota, to meet the first criteria of selecting both the cases and the control from the same underlying population. The second criteria, meaning that you select the cases and the control independently of exposure, meaning the smoking in this case. That means you can pick the cases from the patient having lung cancers and the control from the patient having cancer, other cancers, but not lung cancers. And then you can go back and look at whether your cases and your control, how often they smoke, and then look at the association that way. If you do that thing, if you select your case and control meeting both of the above criteria, you have designed a good study that is ready to be analyzed based on the above method that Dr. Chen already discussed.
Apparently, there are a lot of information to consider when you design a case control study. Comparing to other types of study designs, what are the advantages of a case control study?
The case control study design offers several advantages. For example, it is less expensive. If you take into account, if you recall the randomized control trials that we talked about last time, randomized control trial is a multi-million dollar trial, a multi-million dollar research project. For a case control study, you can do it with much less money as well as take less time to conduct compared to the prospective study, naming the randomized control trial. And if your disease is very rare, it takes forever, and maybe it's even not possible to conduct a randomized control trial. Therefore, for the case control, this is the advantage because you can get the disease rare and you can pick your cases, prevalent cases, for example, that are already there for you to study. And it also requires a much smaller sample size. And if you recall from randomized control trial that we discussed last time, you can only have one single question for one randomized control trial due to the rigorous control of both type 1 and type 2 error. However, for a case control study, you can study multiple factors for a single disease and at the same time. and it could be reproduced easily in different populations by different investigators if they choose to reproduce your study. However, every study design has both advantage and disadvantage. So that's a chance. What are the disadvantages of the case control study?
The population of origin for cases is difficult to design precisely. It is difficult to identify and select an appropriate control group. And as Dr. Fan mentioned earlier, case control design does not provide information on risk. It only provides information on odds ratio. An odds ratio can approximate risk ratio when the disease is rare.
I know that there are a lot of information. Most of them are very technical in this podcast, as well as the previous podcast on randomized control trial. We always try to compare and contrast different study designs to which order to help you to remember what we talked about last podcast. And I also would like to offer you a few sentences in summary of what we talked about today's podcast. To summarize, a case control design is an observational study to start with. Is it an effective method to study the association? Remember the association and not causation between the exposure and then the disease, especially when the disease is rare, meaning that we can use the odds ratio to approximate the risk ratio that we can obtain if we chose to design a prospective study, namely either a cohort study, which we will discuss later on, as well as randomized controlled trial. However, it does not come without limitations, as Dr. Chen already discussed above, meaning the selection and the information bias. And Dr. Chen also talked that case control study can only provide us with the odds ratios, which is an indirect approximation of the risk ratio only when the disease is rare. Therefore, as I said in the randomized control trial, randomized control trial provide enough evidence for you to change your clinical practice. Or it's different with a case control study. The result of any case control study should be carefully interpreted before generalize the result to all the population. So you know that you have to be, this is an observational study, so you have to be careful when you read and interpret the result and use the result to change your clinical practice. Dr. Chen, thank you very much for your time discussing about the basic design and analysis of the case control study. And I hope this podcast is going to provide the listener with a quick summary of a case control study design.
Thank you, Dr. Fan.
Thank you.